Välkomna ska ni vara till ytterligare ett frontavsnitt. Och idag ska vi prata med Oleksiy som är frontsoldat i Ukraina.
Did you have good radio communication equipment as well?
Yeah, Motorola. Well, it was quite good. Yeah, quite good.
Mm. Did you have enough of them?
Sorry?
Did you have enough of them or did you need more?
At some points, they are enough. Then, you know, people die and those Motorolas get lost or something happens to them. Then we need them again, those Motorolas. Okay, so it's not like you have planned something for the year. Okay, we need 5 night visions until the December and that will be enough for us. No, the guys can lose them just in the forest just because they are under fire. So they just quit it because at some point you understand that metal and all of this is less important than you are being alive. So this is what happens constantly. And in those conditions, right now, for example, it's winter, it's cold. Sometimes it's wet and cold. Sometimes it can be in rain and whatever it can be. So things like this, they get broken quite easily. There are many factors that make them makes all of this is very, very vulnerable. So you cannot just plan how many you need. You take as many as you can get. I don't remember we ever had more night vision equipment than we needed. So it's a process, you know.
Mm. Yeah, when you were a scout, what was the biggest threat to you? Was it like helicopters, drones, artillery, tanks, infantry?
Tanks is the most fearful, the most scary shit because you really cannot hear when the tank shoots. You do not hear that. You already hear when it's, you know, when it comes. Okay. Planes. Like jets, I mean, the bombs they threw in Kherson in particular, that was also a threat and also, yeah, scary thing.
Yeah, even if you were scouts, did you have any anti-tank capabilities like javelin or anti-tank weaponry?
Yeah, we had those pipes, like RPG or Western analogs of RPG. War is a mess, and you just often find a weapon that was abandoned by someone on the front line. So you go somewhere and say, oh, that's a good thing, I will take it. So yes, we had things like this, but we are not, infantry. When we do not go forward, we do not attack as intelligence, as scouts. Yes, scouts. And I don't think we have ever met a tank that close to hit it. With something you mentioned before. No, javelins, we never use javelins. Not mm-hmm. we. Mostly tanks, you know, they are shooting our positions from 2 kilometers, maybe a bit closer, but they were far. So we cannot get them mm-hmm. from our positions. Mm-hmm.
When you were out on scout missions, were you always out in the forest or the countryside, or did you do it in cities as well, in houses?
It was Bakhmut, in Solidar, but I didn't do that because I was in the hospital for another reason, not a wound. It was another reason. I had some surgery, but that's nothing special. But nevertheless, I missed all that fun in the cities. Fun. Yeah, the our company worked in the urban areas, but not me. I just don't know what to tell you here. They say it's totally different. It's much more threatening, and you know, it's very difficult in coordinational way. I think to be a scout on the front line is like it is in the books, like how they taught you. So the best way is when this conflict is frozen. No active things like this. Then you can be effective, more effective. Then you can use those knowledges that you were taught. In our case, they were shooting this, everything they got. So it wasn't exactly the type of scouting that we were expecting.
In general, what do you think about the progress of the war? Are you making some advancements, or are you standing still, or?
We are returning, I guess, some areas, but they are tiny, you know, like every inch, every kilometer is very expensive. We pay a lot of. I don't know. It's more about positional war right now. That's how it looks. So this counterattack that was announced long before it wasn't the best idea, I guess. Now you can see that. But we also didn't have enough of, you know, everything to make it successful. They have, you know, domination in the air, Russia, and they have defense line, which is also very, very good. They have been preparing for this for many months. They have mines. They have so many mines that it's just, well, amazingly many mines. You know, I one of my brothers in arms, he stepped on the mine. It exploded. He lost part of his leg, and he fell. And he fell after that, and he fell on another mine. So it ripped out somewhere, like it was his chest and arm and somewhere here. But more or less, he's okay. He's alive. But just for understanding how many mines there are, it's very difficult. I don't think we need to go on intensive war right now. We need more iron, military iron, in more artillery, more play those aviation, rockets, missiles, whatever. So we have paid with too many people.
Have you met any foreign fighters that fights for Ukraine?
Yes, I have.
Where were they from?
USA, New Zealand, France, England, and I guess that's it. Yeah. So I haven't met many of them, But maybe 10 people in general, like foreigners who fight for Ukraine, I have met. Yeah.
Yeah. What were they like? Were they like professional soldiers or idealists?
Some of them had some experience in Iraq, I guess. In Iraq, yeah. I remember a British guy, and then he told me the story. He's an English guy, Englishman, that he has a medal of his maybe even grandfather for liberation of Crimea back then, when they were fighting Russians for Crimea. So he said that I have an idea, I have the vision that I want to get the same medal for returning Ukraine, Crimea to Ukraine. So that was his motivation, and I found it quite amusing, and I guess worth it in a way. Mm-hmm. But most obviously for me, that they have seen that what's happening here is definitely, well, there is obvious bad side and obvious good side in Ukraine. So that's motivation, I guess, very strong for anyone who comes here and is not Ukrainian.
Yeah. Right now you're in Sweden. How does it feel to come to another country in the midst of this?
Well, I think a few times I caught myself thinking I want to go back. Like, even not thinking, but feeling like I want to go back. First time I have, when we crossed the border, I appeared in, we came to Warsaw, Poland, and when I came out of the train, I had a kind of, you know, controlled light panic attack for, I don't know for what reason, but understanding that nothing can kill you here from the air or from somewhere else. I don't know how it works, but this is Western perception, I guess.
Yeah. When you were at the front line, did you have any time off so you could get home to your hometown and visit friends and so on?
Yeah, it happened, but it depends on the place and the time. So in Kherson, we were like switching. We had two teams, and one team spent a week, then another team came, substituted this team, and you know, so week after week, it was like a sort of shift. And when we had a week back, a bit behind the front, we always asked to let us go for a couple of days at home. No, to home. Because there is not much option when you are staying in the tree line alone and you need to spend the week. It's just drinking, nothing else you can do. So yeah, usually our commanding officers let us go, unofficially let us go home, and on condition that we will return within 3-4 days. In Solidar, nothing like this was possible. So it was harsh. And I must say that from, you know, this war is getting more and more harsh. First it was Kherson, it seemed that it very, very hard times, but then came Bakhmut and Solidar, it appeared even more hard, and we had much more casualties in our company. And now it's Zaporizhia that I do not participate, but I'm still in close contact with all my Well, there are not many of them left, but yet with all my brothers in arms who are still in that company, how do you call them? Not intelligence, but
reconnaissance.
No. The one. Not military intelligence, but what's the name do you use?
I said scout or reconnaissance.
Scout. Reconnaissance. I never heard of it. Okay, so I keep in contact with them, and I know that in Zaporizhia, it's harder than ever anything was before. There is almost no woods, no tree lines that we usually used as a shelter. People die there very intensively.
This interview with you, there are a couple of thousand Swedes that's going to hear it. And what is the most common misperception that Swedes have about this war that you can set the record straight and try to explain to the Swedes that this is actually what's going on?
I didn't have much conversations about that with the Swedes. You mean Swedish people, Swedes, right? I never discussed that with, I guess you're the first Swedish person. No, I have my friend Bent, but I don't know about typical perception for typical Swedish person about this conflict in Ukraine. I wish, but I have I feel like most of Swedish people, they don't understand what's happening there, and that's absolutely natural because no one does beside people who are there. But one more thing, they are not really interested to understand. So which is what would be important for Ukraine, for Ukrainians, and I guess for avoiding anything that's happening right now in Ukraine, is wish to understand. So you gotta, get interested in what's happening there, in what's happening with people in the conditions that, that Ukrainian soldiers are right now. So the people say a lot about civilians, and it's a little difficult to live in the cities, especially if the cities are, more in the east. That's true, but this is what news are telling about life of ordinary soldier. News don't say a lot. And I think it's very important that people should want to know it.
If someone who listens to this wants to contribute to Ukraine in some way, what should they do?
There are a lot of volunteering funds, right? I'm not sure. I can get some information especially for you. I can send you some links if you might need that.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to just give you answer right now.
Yeah, I understand. You're in Sweden right now, and you're going to return to Ukraine. What do you feel about that?
I feel okay. I feel I have to do that. I feel I miss my guys.
Yeah. And you're going to serve with the logistics company in the
army.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
What kind of work do you do there?
Different. But mostly I'm like a driver. But there are a lot of different tasks, actually. let's stop on the driver.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's like in the army, you have to do a lot of things. It's not just one thing, and it will be boring. Actually, my service right now is quite boring. Mostly, I try just what I said, that I keep in contact with my comrade, brothers in arms who are currently in the active zone of combat actions.
And what do you think about the future? When we talked about it earlier, I felt that you were a bit pessimistic, that you think that this war is going to drag on for a long time.
Yeah, I do. So the question is whether this war will go on longer than we all want it to be. Okay, yeah, I think even if somehow we will return our territories, let's say in the next year, Russia will make conclusions. They have already, as far as I know, started new plans in producing some military equipment, I know that they have started producing own drones of a new type. So they have already started preparing for the next war, in my understanding. They don't put high stakes on what's going on right now. They will try to stick to the areas they already have, to the territories they already have. But even if we will make them leave, they will come back. Maybe it will take 5 years, maybe four, maybe six. They will, no matter who will be in charge in Russia. Even if Putin dies, it doesn't change anything, in my opinion. And I'm not the only one who thinks that way in Ukraine. So this is, we feel pretty much like Israel, meaning surrounded by enemy. We have Belarus, we have part of Moldova, which is also controlled by pro-Russian, pro-Russians. And I guess we have to find a way to live in this situation. We have to build our own army to, actually. Yeah, it's very pessimistic. Life will never be again the same as it was before 24th of February, and especially before March of 2014. So we are now doomed for new way of thinking.
That actually concludes all the questions that I had. Is there something that you want to add that you feel that, why hasn't he asked me about this?
There is a lot of things to discuss, actually. More specific questions needed. I'm not sure there is a question There are many questions you might ask me, and you might get maybe informative and even interesting answers. Okay, can I ask you?
Yeah, now, sure.
Do you feel difference? I mean, I'm pretty much sure that you met a number of Ukrainians as well as Russians. So do you feel the difference between Ukrainians and Russians? Can you just...
Well, the thing is that the Russians... the Russians I have met, that was like 20 years ago. And I would like to say that I experience Ukrainians more humble. That's from my very, very limited experience.
Yeah, I understand you, but that's very accurate detail, and that's the true detail, that more humbled. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and then since I've been talking to Olga a lot over the past 6 months, and I've learned loads and loads about Ukraine that I didn't know before. And we talk about the way that the society, the civilian part of Ukraine, how it has been affected by the war. It affects everybody and everywhere. It's not like people can't live their ordinary lives.
That's true. What is the question?
Well, it's not really a question. It's more of a statement that this war has affected everybody. This is no one that is excluded, and there's not a place in Ukraine that also is excluded from this war. That everybody and everything is affected.
There are places that never were bombed, and not a single shot was heard, and from the first sight, you can think that they live a normal life, but of course, emotionally, of course, they understand what's going on, and they accepted what happens. But you know, they are also different. These people, they also changed, even though they have never faced any terror, any horror of war. Yeah, well, actually, Ukrainians get mobilized to the army from every part of Ukraine. So, it concerns everybody.
Mm. There's been some rumors and reports about atrocities and war crimes. Have you seen any example of this?
Personally, me?
Yeah.
No. No, yeah, I'm not the kind of person who will try to make things better than they are, but from what I have seen, what I have known, no, I'm sure it's war, something can happen somewhere, and you know, people are people everywhere, and people in condition of war, they sometimes say. But no, I even haven't heard of something like from the guys, because, you know, rumors inside of army, they are very special. That's a very special thing. Information, there is a lot of information that you can hear from the guys you serve in the army with. I haven't heard. Maybe sometimes a bit rough with people who are surrounded. Maybe, but I never heard things like someone shot somebody with a flag, with a white flag in his hands. No, not like this.
No.
But this is just a part of war, if we're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
No, they are Russians. Sometimes you gotta do things like that. I mean, not killing, not shooting, but being rough. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
There's a lot of rage, a lot of hatred. They did so many to Ukrainians. The Russians were extremely, extremely violent and cruel, including civilians in the beginning of war. They were like before they started losing territories that they occupied, they were very brutal. So a lot of hate.
Och där pausar vi intervjun med Oleksiy och vi kommer att fortsätta med den intervjun nästa vecka. Vi hörs då. Vi har en väldigt glad och rolig grej att berätta. Det är nämligen så att vi ska för första gången göra ett live-framträdande där vi spelar in program inför publik. Det kommer att ske den 7 juni 2024 klockan 19.30 på kvartersscenen Andra Lång på Andra Långgatan i Göteborg. Det kommer att vara inspelning av avsnitt såklart och så kommer vi också ha en frågestund och möjlighet att snacka lite med mig och Niklas om det är någonting man har på hjärtat. Och vill ni ha tag på biljetter så går man till Andra Långs hemsida. Det är 2lang.se, det är alltså en 2 och sen lang.se. Så hittar ni biljetter där. Vi ses! Vill ni komma i kontakt med oss så kan ni göra det via vår Facebook-sida som heter Fronten. Det är inga problem för er att leta er fram där. Eller också så mejlar ni på vår mejladress och det är frontenpodcast@gmail.com.